Restaurant Unstoppable, episode 1070 with Brett Oliverio.
You know, doing things the right way, working incredibly hard, treating people as good as you can possibly treat them, and being overly generous. And if that's not good enough, take a hike.
Are you ready for It Factors, success stories, failures, and bombs of restaurant industry knowledge? Then, join Eric Cacciatore and today's incredible guest as they share what it takes to become unstoppable.
This episode brought to you by Owner.com. Owner.com is the leading all-in-one platform for restaurant marketing. Owner.com powers everything from SEO-optimized websites, direct online ordering, automated email and text marketing, built-in loyalty programs, zero-commission delivery, and branded mobile apps for your restaurant that's integrated right into your POS. With Owner.com, there's no contract, no hidden fees, and nothing to lose. Join thousands of restaurant owners using Owner.com to grow direct online sales, save thousands in third-party fees, and simplify their online ordering presence all in one. Book a free demo today at owner.com/unstoppable and see why owner.com is the number one rated restaurant marketing software. Imagine you had an employee who never called out, kept inventory in line, could spit out sales and cost data at a moment's notice, and saved you hours of work. You'd want to hire that person, right? Margin Edge is the boost in efficiency you need and doesn't add to your labor cost. Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that allows you to seamlessly manage all aspects of your business from one central location. With Margin Edge, you can track food costs in real time, make inventory faster and less tedious, easily cost out your recipes, and get a daily P&L so you always know where you stand. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insights. Once more, that's marginedge, marginedge.com/unstoppable. This podcast was made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live, where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. To learn more, head to go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. This episode made possible by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, use cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way. With excitement, allow me to introduce to you today's guest, owner of Sup Dogs, Brett Oliverio. My man, Brett, are you feeling unstoppable today?
Today, not so much. My feet hurt from this weekend, but I, you know, as the day goes on, just had an espresso, you know, as the week goes on and we get into the week, I start to get my vibes back.
You got a tall water there. Suck that thing down. You'll freshen.
Yeah, but I'm good. I'm good. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Psyched to have you here. Will Browley from Schedule Fly was adamant. He's like, you got to get this guy on the show.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
I mean, and I see why. Just after, I only give myself about an hour to research my guests. I don't like to know too much. I just like to know enough.
Sure.
And it's a really inspiring story. You know, we'll get into it. But you guys really started from no experience to like what you are today, known nationwide in this incredible brand. And I know you're vertically integrating your vodka that's something I'm really interested in.
Cool.
There's a ton of things I can't wait to dive into today.
Thank you.
But before we get into who you are and how you got to where you are today, let's get that motivational, inspirational ball rolling with a success quote or mantra. What do you got for us?
Mine is short, and it goes back to something I learned in basketball camp growing up when I was probably, 12 years old. It's a quote It's just a couple words. You let up, you lose.
Ooh, you let up, you lose.
So, I mean, there was like basketball camp t-shirts that just had that one phrase, you let up, you lose. And that's kind of how I feel about the restaurant business. It's like...
pedal to the metal.
Yeah, and it's like, people are like, oh, aren't you proud of what you've done? I'm like, I mean, I feel like it could all go away tomorrow. So, and I feel like I have to just keep improving, keep getting better, and just being relentless and working 24 hours a day to not let up, because someone's always trying to come for you. That's kind of what's always on my mind.
And the world around us is evolving constantly, faster than ever before.
Totally true.
So if you stay to where you are, if you stay static, the world is dynamic. The world will move beyond you. So I think it's the right mentality to have.
And I think, you know, people also quickly forget about you in any profession or job. So it's like, you know, we always got to keep getting better. You always got to keep improving. There's always a way to improve the business and to improve your processes. And so when you asked me that question, it just sort of popped into my head. You let up, you lose.
I love it, man. Great way to get this thing started. So where does it make sense to start sharing your story? Take us to the beginning.
You know, I had a career in, you know, I went to James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. You know, I majored in marketing and business, and I knew I wanted to do radio. I'd always been in broadcasting.
Here you are.
Yeah, exactly. Here I am. After, you know, my senior year in high school, I just knew I wanted to do radio, maybe some television stuff, but I wanted a degree in business just in case, you know, radio really didn't pan out or broadcasting. And the restaurant business just sort of, you know, I would have bet in a billion years that I ever would own a restaurant or a distillery or a couple restaurants. That thought is just would have been ludicrous to me.
I love when I see people who aren't from inside the industry come into the industry with a background in something different. And like, what happens is you see it from a different perspective. You have ideas that traditional restaurant owners don't think of. And I see that in your story, just with the idea of approaching college athletes to see if they would want to, be brand advocates, or what's the term?
Yeah. There's a whole name, image, and likeness thing going on in college sports. But yeah, I'm glad I didn't know anything about the restaurant industry, because to be honest with you, I might not have gotten into it because
scared straight.
It's so hard. And I didn't know jumping into it how hard it would have been. So, you know, I graduated from JMU in 2003 and then worked in radio and television full time in Washington, D.C. area for a sports talk radio show called The Sports Junkies. You know, we took over for Howard Stern when he went to satellite radio in D.C. and Baltimore. So it was a pretty big time show.
Wow.
I was executive producer, then sort of worked my way up to assistant program director at a pretty big time station in D.C. And then my wife worked in sales. She sold online homeschool curriculum. And then
way ahead of the curve, huh?
Yeah. But my wife had worked in restaurants her entire life. And even when we were dating and after we got married, she had worked in restaurants forever. But it was kind of just something she did because the money was so good. And she had a full-time job, but she would work, once or twice a week just for extra money. Yeah.
Dude, you're totally been in broadcasting, pulling that one ear off.
Oh, like, yeah.
Clearly
I want to make sure, I want to know if people can hear me or not.
Man. So what was going on? Like, you always wanted to work in broadcasting. Are you still doing broadcasting today or?
No, because I feel like I've already done it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I did it in the DC area, and it was cool. It was fun. I miss being on the radio. You know, before I got into restaurants, we were broadcasting from the Super Bowl in Indianapolis. And then, you know, that was on like a Friday, and then Monday the moving trucks came. We moved down here to Greenville, North Carolina, to take over Sup Dogs.
That was 2010?
That was 2000. February 2nd or 3rd, 2012.
Okay.
Correct.
Through the lens of a marketing student, marketer, broadcaster, what are the things you think you do differently today as a restaurateur that you wouldn't do if you didn't have that background?
You know, a lot of the stuff I do in marketing is relates back to what I did in radio, putting on big events, how to get attention. I mean, we would do things like, you know, I remember booking Hayden Panettiere. Do you know her? She was an actress.
No.
She used to be like all over TMZ and And, you know, I remember booking celebrities in hopes of doing an interview with them on our radio show and then it making headlines on TMZ or Perez Hilton. So just being able to sort of generate mainstream buzz, being able to put on big events. At our radio station, we put on, like big poker tournaments and spring break parties and sundress, like all sorts of different big events. So I sort of took the marketing stuff that I learned in radio and brought it over to restaurants.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see a lot of this in the future of restaurants. You've always seen the chef maitre d' partnership or the chef accountant lawyer partnership with these key elements of running a restaurant that you just need to have somebody who's in that lane who knows what they're doing because it's so important. And I think you're going to see in the future more chef marketer partnerships because of how important it is today.
It's no stranger, but social media marketing, it's a secret sauce. I mean, think about it. When was the last time you went to a restaurant that had bad food? Right. It's pretty good everywhere, from like independent restaurants to Chili's to Outback.
There's no excuse. There's so much information out there.
It's like, all pretty good.
Right.
So you need everything else. You got to have good food, good product, good marketing, good energy inside the restaurant. You kind of have to have it all if you want to succeed.
And all those things you just listed are full-time jobs.
Oh my gosh.
On top of running
totally
a restaurant?
Like, I love doing the marketing for a restaurant. I do, you know, we're in the process of hiring some people to help, but, you know, I love doing it, but it's a full-time job. Just the marketing.
Yeah. Just interviewed these three dudes up in New Hampshire, Dead Proof Pizza, Matt, Dante, and Vinny. Matt is the chef, and they're doing pop-ups, right? Matt's the chef. His first business partners that he brought on are marketing and like media.
Smart.
And like, they're killing it.
Smart.
And it's so smart. And I think you have to think like this in the future of restaurants. It's super powerful.
I mean, I don't cook. I'm not like some foodie. I'm pretty good at knowing. I think I know what people are going to like. I think that's my strength. But I'm not like I can jump. You know, if can you curse on here? Or you don't curse.
Yeah,
you can. If shit's hitting the fan, you'll know our restaurants are a total disaster if I'm back in the kitchen. And sometimes, once or twice a year, I'm back there on the line. But I'm not like some chef. I don't know what ingredients work with food. But like our food is awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, the whole chef side of things is there's definitely, a lot of restaurants that work off that, but you got to have more than good food.
Oh, 100%. We're moving into the experience economy, we're in it. We're 100% in it. So before we dive into how the backstory of SupDog, since you came on in 2012, it started in 2008 with your brother Derek. Before we kind of share the story of how SupDog came to be, paint the picture of where SupDog is today. Like, what's going on? You have two locations, you have a distillery, like what else?
Yeah, we have two locations. We have a location here in Greenville, North Carolina, right next door to East Carolina University. We have another one on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill, right next door to University of North Carolina. And then we have a distillery and cocktail bar, which is about 50 feet from our location here in Greenville. And, you know, that's what we have. And it's kind of like almost like two separate businesses. It's, you have a liquor production side and manufacturing side. We were in here bottling vodka earlier today, and then a cocktail bar, which is about to open right now. So there's a lot going on, and, we probably would have, we've come close to opening on Hillsborough Street right next to NC State. Haven't had made that happen yet, but, I'm just sort of drowning in work as it is between the two locations and over here.
I'm sure. So what was, you said the original, and then you said, is there another one in Greenville or was something else?
No.
Oh, okay.
So we have SupDog right over there. And then this is the distillery. And then we have one in Chapel Hill.
Two SupDog, the distillery, and the cocktail bar.
Correct. Which is all right here.
Yeah. All right here.
And then we're actually looking at SupDog, which is, 50 feet away
on the other side of the road. And I will be going through there and grabbing some B-roll. That's cool.
Cool. Yeah, sure.
For sure. I want to capture that while I'm in town. So we're sitting in the cocktail bar right now with the distillery right behind us. So that's where you are today. No nationwide. There's a lot I want to unpackage, but now that we've kind of started with the end in mind, let's go back to 2008. Like, what's the story behind SupDog?
Yeah, I mean, my little brother always knew he wanted to open a hot dog restaurant with specialty hot dogs, specialty burgers, beer, liquor, all in like a high energy college environment. That was kind of his dream and his idea. And he always wanted to call it Sup Dogs, because back in the day, you know, you'd meet someone, hey, what's up, dog? And you'd give each other five or whatever. I mean, people don't really say that much anymore nowadays. People think, oh, you got that from The Office, that Office episode. But it really wasn't. It was just from, like, when my little brother was in high school, him and his friends would be like, what's up, dog? What's up? So he's like, so he went to James Madison University, as did I. And then he started, as soon as he graduated, maybe a year after he graduated, he opened, my sister went to school here. So that's kind of how we got to know.
I was curious about that.
Yeah. People are like, you know, why Greenville? It's like, well, my sister was in school here and, you know, he was looking at West Virginia University, maybe a little bit at JMU. And then we sort of found this little, or Derek's found this little hole in the wall here in Greenville when my sister was a freshman or sophomore at ECU.
This is 100% a momentum market. Exploding. Because my ex-girlfriend went to ECU.
Okay, cool.
And I actually have been in Greenville before. This is going back 2007, 2006. So just before your brother opened.
Wow.
And I remember this town.
Really?
Then, and I remember trying to get a pizza in this town. And I was like, it was in 2007. No offense to Greenville. There was no pizza to be found.
Yeah. No, I know. There's barely pizza to be found. I mean, there is right next door, finally. But
well, so much has changed since 2007.
True.
The smartphone came out and food across the country just got elevated.
True.
You know, and so this, I wish it was, I'm sure I would have went to Sup Dogs when I was here back in 2007 if it was open at that point. But this market, I think even like ECU has exploded in the past.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think... you know, there's a lot of money to be made here in Greenville if you do things the right way.
College towns, man.
Totally. Beat the energy.
No, there's so much money to be made in college towns. Plus, you have a whole army of people looking for work that are constantly...
See, I think that is significantly overrated. People
really?
Think okay. that. I mean, college kids, it's not like when I was in college where,
kids
you know,
today.
Yeah, you're going to work for Penny. They want to do other things. They want... Right. A lot of times they're doing...
They're making money online.
Yeah, they're making money online. They're doing jobs that are a little more glamorous. Cooking in a restaurant kitchen is not glamorous.
Yeah.
Another thing is, a lot of times their parents don't want them, you know, I don't want you cooking food till 3 a.m. You need to study for your, we want you to get an internship on Wall Street.
Right.
So it's just, you know, there's a ton of other jobs to be done. So
but they're still drinking.
We're, totally. Of course. So we're lucky that, you know, we've been able to attract and have this and keep the staff that we have, but it's not as easy as people think to bring in talent.
So your brother, you kind of started sharing the vision that he had.
Yeah.
It's an extension of who he is. Sup Dogs. Just a nod to your brother. I think he's a genius, was a genius for seeing the value and just doing one thing really well and sticking to it and keeping it simple.
Totally
in terms
true.
Of, in, it, like, why is that true?
Yeah. I mean, he was just locked in on this idea of specialty hot dogs, beer and liquor in a college town. And, you know, our family, we didn't have a lot of money. I mean, we had four kids in our family. My mom stayed at home. My dad was a PE teacher and was a part-time real estate appraiser. So, you know, when he wanted to start a restaurant, we were kind of like, well, how is he going to do this? Like, where is he going to get his money? So my dad took out a home equity loan for him. For like $60,000. I think my granddad chipped in another $60,000 and sort of refurbished this rinky dink, you know, 1,000 square foot restaurant with a horrible outside deck right next to the East Carolina University campus. And at the time, my older brother and I were like, oh man, this is probably a bad idea. But you know what? This was Derek's dream, and you know, my dad wanted to make it happen for him and we were going to give it a go, and he just kind of sort of willed it into existence.
So if Derek was sitting in your seat right now, and he was sharing the story of like the first year or like trying to open the challenges, like hearing it through, I'm sure he told you about the stories and the challenges. What were those challenges for him?
You know, I think a lot of them were like balancing being, he was 23 or 24 when he opened up Sup Dog. So I think balancing being a 23 or 24 year old in a college town with girls everywhere, single.
Oh my gosh.
Opening a business that has alcohol, selling tons of alcohol, tons of food. So running a lunch, dinner, late night service, and just sort of doing it all by yourself with no processes in place. And that was the challenge. I mean, we visited a bunch of times where, you know, he'd be back there cooking and then pop out on the floor and make a drink. And then he's yelling at a staff member and then he's flirting with some girl. And so it was just like sort of the Wild West. And we didn't, I didn't really ask him, you know, how's business revenue wise? Do you have any money in the bank? So
he was making money though. He, 4 years, right? 2008 to 2012.
Yeah, I mean, people were coming through the door. Now, when we moved down here, there was barely any money in the bank. And so what, you know, there was revenue. I don't think he was making any money.
Right. Your brother is who I made this podcast.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And they, and people who are loved, people who are talented, who are able to attract onto themselves the right people, who are working crazy hours, and just like they have a passion for it, but they don't really know the level of attention on the details of the back of office stuff, of like controlling the numbers. And I don't want to make assumptions, but
no,
I'm kind of reading between the lines.
Spot on, bullseye. Okay. You know, his strengths were he was the best looking guy, the coolest guy, every guy wanted to be friends with him, the hardest working guy. Yep. Every guy wanted to be boys with him. Every girl had a crush on him. People were just attracted to his energy. Now, that being said, and that's why people were coming through the door. I think he also had the ability to know, he sort of had a natural ability, which I do as well, to know what people are going to like when it comes to food and drinks and energy. But the business side of things was a total mess, because how can you do it all, especially at 23? It's impossible. Yeah. Unless you have a ton of money, but we didn't.
Right. And I know the story is online. Will Bradley did a beautiful job, Schedule Fly. He came in and kind of shared the story of Sup Dogs.
Yeah.
If you guys want to watch that video, I can link to it in the show notes. This is episode 1070. So just, you know, if you want to find that video. But what happened? Like, why isn't he here today?
Yeah. I mean, it was a Thursday night, September 27, 2011. We have a picture of him. He was hanging a TV that night at like 2 a.m, like upgrading the TVs here at Sup Dogs. And then he went home and his house was on fire when he got home. And then he went in while it was on fire to try to save his two dogs and never made it out. So,
just that action alone tells you the kind of guy he was to take that kind of risk.
Ballsy, intense, hard-headed. I mean, I never would have done that. Knowing my personality, 0.0.
But how much love for a thing do you need to have? And, you know, the shows.
Totally. And knowing Derek, I mean, it doesn't surprise anybody that he did that. So it was one of those moments where, like, I remember my wife and I were sleeping. You just get that nightmare phone call that's just totally changed your life. And you know, everyone has had, I think people can relate to our story because everybody's had felt some sort of tragedy, whether it was a grandmother or parent or brother, sister, pet, whatever. I mean, everyone's tragedies are, everyone's losses are big and enormous to them. But, you know, just that nightmare phone call that you get at 4 a.m. is just, that totally changed your life and your family's life and just the whole course of my brother, my sister, my parents, everything. It's just total nightmare.
And this was September of 2012?
Yeah, September 27th, 2011, actually.
2011,
yeah.
So he's 3 years in to the business. Busy, people love him, has a name for himself in the community. This tragedy happens. What happened after? Like, how did you end up here?
Yeah, I mean, so then right after that, I mean, you're planning a funeral, which is weird to do. Picking out a casket, like just doing a lot of weird
for a 26-year-old.
Yeah, jeez. Exactly. Yeah. Just doing weird things. You know, my older brother was dealing with his estate. Just the next few weeks after someone passes away are just really weird and tough to even remember. But you're just trying to survive each day. Like, how are you gonna wake up the next day? So it was just.
I know it's not easy to talk.
So
thank you for opening up.
I actually like talking about it. Customers come in here and ask me about it all the time. I like talking about it. But when you get to like, when you're talking about on the surface to a customer, hey, I remember Sup Dogs, I remember your brother, that's easy. But when you start to really talk about it in depth, it can be tough. But
I'm sure.
Man. Yeah, but but I enjoy talking about it. So like you're just trying to survive those next few weeks. And then my wife and I actually got married 3 weeks after he passed away. So then we had this big wedding with all our family, and it was like just, you know, everyone's grieving. It was just kind of a crazy, crazy time. So shortly after we got married, October 20th, he passed away September 27th. We got married October 22nd, went on our honeymoon, and then just kind of sort of started talking about, like, what do we, you know, what's going to happen to Sup Dogs? What are we going to do?
So did Sup Dogs close for a period?
I think we closed for like 2 days, but like there was a staff in place and some, you know, managers in place that were like, you know, we got to keep it open for them. And then for a while after that, my dad was coming down just to, I don't know what he was doing really, sweeping the floor. I mean, who knows? He didn't know what to do. Just trying to, like, we can't let Derek Stream die. That was kind of the thought. But, you know, my dad was like in his 60s.
He's also invested at this point. He mortgaged his home.
Yeah, but he didn't care about that. If you knew my dad, he just, the money, he didn't have much money and didn't care if he had, you know, just didn't care. Gotcha. So it wasn't like, oh, we got to pay dad's home loan back. Like, nobody cared about that.
Right.
But, yeah, it's just, so it was like, we just started, my dad started coming down once a week, and, you know, the tough part about restaurants when it's a one man show, and we did have some hourly managers on, but like nobody that was really invested in the place. There was no, you know, career path for people. There was no like benefits for employees or sort of management structure. It was Derek running the restaurant and telling everyone what to do. So when he was gone, it was just, who knows?
Right. We're going to take a break to thank our sponsors. When we come back, I want to kind of pivot to where you were in 2011. You talked about just getting married, but like where you were professionally.
This episode made possible by Owner.com. Owner.com is the quickest and easiest way for your customers to order directly from you without the expensive 30% commission fees. Ugh. With Owner.com, you'll save thousands every month when customers order through your website and branded app instead of third-party delivery apps, and reward your customers with a built-in loyalty program that turns them into regulars who order again and again. Owner.com also helps you rank higher on Google with world-class search engine optimization built specifically for restaurants with an AI-powered website. We cannot forget lists. Build a huge list of people who live near your restaurant fast and market to that list on autopilot with text and email sent at the perfect time to help you grow sales and stay top of mind. Owner.com gives you everything you need to grow and market your restaurant online with no contracts or hidden fees. Visit Owner.com/unstoppable right now to book your free demo and see why thousands of restaurant owners trust Owner.com to power their restaurants online. Picture this. It's the end of the month and you're working your way through a shoebox full of invoices and manually entering costs into a janky spreadsheet that is being held together by bubblegum and prayers. And after hours of eye-stabbing tedium, you realize that your numbers don't even match. Oh my God. We've all been there. But it doesn't have to be this hard. Margin Edge can free you from spreadsheet hell. That's because Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that automates invoice processing and shows you your food costs and labor in real time. Just snap a picture of your invoice and Margin Edge takes it from there. Margin Edge will process your invoices automatically with line item detail and combine that information with sales from your POS to give you real-time reporting, including a daily P&L, up-to-date plate costs, and updated inventory count sheets. Stop spending hours to get numbers you're not 100% confident in when you could spend minutes and have accurate, real-time food and labor costs. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insights.
We're back, and you just shared the story of what's Sup Dogs, and your brother's legacy. You kind of painted the picture of where Sup Dogs was in 2011. But where were you in 2011? Like, what? It sounds like you were having a successful career. You were having all these opportunities. You're going in the right direction. What was going on where you were willing to walk away from that?
Yeah, I mean, I never like thought I would just be in broadcasting forever. But I just got promoted to assistant program director at the radio station. Salary benefits, the whole deal. My wife had a pretty good job. We just gotten married and we were kind of just sort of talking about, what we should do. And like, well, you know, what if we just quit our jobs and moved to Greenville and, took over Sup Dogs? And the goal was to, get it to run optimally, put business practices in place and, or just sort of take over the restaurant in hopes of opening up other locations. That was kind of the goal. So, shortly after, maybe we start talking about it, maybe in November, then in December, we just, we told our jobs what our plan was. And, a lot of people thought we were crazy.
Were you happy doing what you're doing?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was fun. I mean, talking on the radio was fun. I mean, look, any job behind the scenes, being the executive producer, you talked on the radio a lot, but then also were in charge of a lot of the stuff behind the scenes.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So the fun part is this. Yeah. The part that sucks is like setting up for broadcasts and meetings and emails and coordinating and
right.
booking
guests.
It's a
lot of stuff behind the scenes. Promotion,
Yeah, promotions, everything. So it was just...
selling sponsorship.
Exactly. And luckily I didn't have to do that, but I had to work with the sales team and execute sponsorships. But it was, I loved broadcasting the Super Bowl. I really enjoyed hanging out with the guys that I worked with day in and day out. So it was a fun job. I really did enjoy it.
So what was like really calling to you to come down here? What was the inner dialogue you're having with yourself to walk away from something that you really enjoyed, that you're good at, that provided you security to come down here?
I don't know. I think it just felt like the right thing to do. I really don't think it was one thing that was like, okay, here's why we have to do it. It was just something my wife and I were talking about, and we were like, yeah, let's just do it.
So it was gut feeling.
Yeah, more so gut feeling. And then I was confident, look, worst case, we come down here. And when I think about it, like, it was like, well, there's a good chance that I could go down there and suck at it. I mean, because, when I think about it, and I tell people about it, it's like, no matter how hard I work, I can't dunk a basketball, right? So, I mean, I could work 24 hours a day to try to dunk a basketball. I'm not going to be able to do it. And there was a chance that that could be the same way in the restaurant business. I could work 24 hours a day. I might not have the skills. I might not have the ability to operate a successful business, no matter how hard I tried. But I was confident in the fact that, if I did move down here and I sucked at it and, worst case, the business failed, we stink at it, the business fails. Okay, we can move back to Northern Virginia and, I'll work at Starbucks or, just get a Joe job.
Right.
I was confident I could do that.
So you came down here, it was 2012, right, when you came down here?
Correct.
What was the biggest challenge for you? What was it like when you got here?
The plan was, we moved in this little apartment. The plan was for my wife to sort of get us set up for a month at home, like, just putting furniture in place and learning the area. And I was going to go into the restaurants and own the restaurant. And I didn't know what that meant. I'd never worked in a restaurant in my life. And I remember showing up, the first few days. And those were really challenging because I'm like, I remember going home and I've told this story to Will at Schedule Fly. Like, I didn't really know what I was doing. I had no clue what I was doing. The days were long. My body was sore. My feet hurt.
How did it make you feel?
It made me feel like I was doing the right thing by being in there, but I was a fish out of water. And I remember going home to my wife one night and being like, it's probably like Saturday night at 1 a.m. I got home. I'm like, I don't know if I could do this. Like, I don't know. This is just really hard. And I don't know what I'm doing. Very little money in the bank.
What were the specific struggles that you had?
I just didn't know anything. I didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know how to ring in a computer. I didn't know how we got paid. You swipe your credit card. Where does the money go? How does it come in the bank? How do you order Pepsi?
How are you received by the staff?
I mean, that's another thing. It's like I can't just come in there and, you know, it's, you know, there's a new sheriff in town, especially when you have no clue what you're doing, and they can look at me and tell I have no clue what I'm doing. So I'm asking them, hey, you know, why are we doing it like this? And they would tell me, and they knew I knew nothing. So it's hard for me to get on them for doing something wrong when I have no clue what I'm doing.
Well, what was your approach? I mean, it sounds like you're very humble. Just in talking to you, you have a lot of humility.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're not the kind of person to come in and start, like, you know, slamming the hammer. Like, it sounds like that you're willing to listen and be educated.
Here's what I said, look, I'm just going to show up every single day and ask every dumb question to everybody. And I remember I would ask the world's dumbest questions to everybody. And I remember they would look at me and people would laugh. They'd be like this idiot. I remember thinking, like, okay, just wait. One day I'm going to have way more money than you and I'm going to be the best at this. But just wait. And I would just keep asking the world's dumbest questions to everyone. From restaurant, anytime I'd go out to eat, I'd meet another restaurant owner in town, I would ask him questions. I remember just Googling how to be a restaurant owner. I found
owner.com, restaurantowner.com.
I literally Google how to own a restaurant. I bought a book on how to run a bar, like bar costs. You know, that's partly how I found Schedulefly. Like they had a book out. It was like
Restaurant Owners Uncorked.
Yeah, exactly. Restaurant Owners Uncorked. I remember reading. I was just trying to figure out how do you know how to be a restaurant owner?
Yeah, I got a lot of inspiration from Will's early work. Not just Will, the Schedulefly team.
Yeah, for sure.
And great resources out there, including their podcast, Restaurant Owners Uncorked.
Yeah.
If you guys are into restaurant podcasts, do go check out Will's podcast. He's a great guy.
Bar Rescue.
Yeah.
That taught me so much stuff.
Yeah.
All those restaurant shows.
Yeah.
Because I mean, how are you supposed to know? And I would ask every stupid question to every chef, restaurant manager, restaurant owner, distributor.
But this is the lesson right here in between the lines. It's like, swallow your pride. Go talk to people.
I had no pride.
Just go talk to people and ask. And you'll be so surprised at how many people are willing to offer help and to give information and give advice. Not everybody.
They are, 100%. But at the same time, kind of making fun of you. But then you got to have that sort of fire inside you that's like, okay, you know, just wait.
But it's that fear being made in front of that people, why they won't go ask for
correct.
Help. You know, so swallow that.
And I talk to a lot of restaurant owners that are just starting out, and like, I'm always happy to help and answer questions. But a lot of them, they want to act like they already know what they're doing.
Yeah,
maybe because they've already worked in a restaurant. But back to what I was saying. I remember coming home to my wife Saturday at 1 a.m. and she's like, "Look," and I remember it's like, "I don't know if I could do this. What do we do? This sucks.
How
this
far
is hard."
In is this?
What's that?
How far in were you when you had this conversation?
Probably like 3 weeks.
Okay.
And I'm like, this is just too hard. I don't know what I'm doing. And she's like, "Look, stop being a bitch. Go in there, walk around, hand people their food, get refills, talk to people." She's like, "You'll know who wants to talk to you, who doesn't want to talk to you. Be nice to people. Ask staff how they're doing. Keep asking questions. Just come on. You got this."
Thanks, honey.
Yeah. And that kind of was like, okay. So, you know, from then on, my mentality was, I'm going to show up here every single day and I'm going to work 24 hours a day, every single day. And there's a chance I could still suck. There's a chance we could still have no money. There's a chance that the business could just still be the Wild West with no business practices in place. But all I can do is work 24 hours a day and hope I can pull it off.
What was the tipping point? When did things start to get better?
I think maybe about a year into it.
Okay.
We started to save a little bit of money. But keep in mind, we're living in a tiny apartment. I'm driving a old Ford Explorer that we took all our wedding money and to put into the transmission. My wife's driving a 2004 Toyota Corolla. Like, we're living, you know... I all the credit goes to my wife. I mean, do you know how many... We moved down here. I was 30. She was 34. I would be like, "Jenny, you have to work Saturday behind the bar because we need the $150 that she would make in tip money." So here she is in a college town. And you remember, like, you ECU back in the day, this crazy madness of a college town. Everyone's drunk. And here she is working late nights because we needed the $150. And, you know, I'm... she's working at night, I'm working during the day, vice versa. She'd serve some lunch, served a lot of lunches, and I would work at night and just trying to grind through it and scrounge up money to live in hopes that the business can save money. So for years, we made pennies in hopes to save money for the business. And that's a tough part about owning a restaurant. It's like most people just have to think about their own personal finances. Here I am, like, I got to like think about the business finances when we have no money, and then my own personal finances, and I had no money. It's like,
and then all of your employees that are depending on the job, right?
Everyone wants raises. They're all depending on the, that's another whole side of things. Yeah. So it's,
so what started to happen after a year? Did I cut you short?
No. We just started, saving some money. And that was you know, if you run out of money, the game's over. Yeah. You know, the walk-in cooler breaks.
Dude.
You don't have $5,000. You're cooked.
You have no idea how the coincidence of you talking about this right now. Because I literally was in my camper, in like right out front of your Sup Dogs location here in Greenville, live in the network with past guests, Danny and Alan from Cracked Kitchen up in Massachusetts. And he was talking about just this, the importance of having money put away. If you're living with $100 in your checking account, it's such a bad place to exist because things happen. You need security. You need cushion. The refrigerator breaks. You know, like you burn a bunch of food or like whatever. Like you got to get to that point where you got to be putting money aside. Yeah. So what was your approach to saving? Were you following any advice or like?
Just living extremely frugal in my personal life and just saving every cent for the business.
That's amazing advice too.
There's no, even to this day, like it's not like I'm buying boats or nice cars or, I was all in on trying to save money for the business. Mm. But at the same time, like I remember buying a frozen drink machine off eBay for $3,000, which I was also dumb because we didn't have much money in the bank. But I thought it was a lot. I don't know.
It's relative to, you know, what you might have had in the past.
I think we had like $28,000 when I moved down here in the bank. And we probably owed the food distributor $9,000 and DirecTV $2,000. But I thought that was a lot of money. I didn't know.
How fast did that go away?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I didn't know. But that brings me to like, I didn't know.
What you don't know.
What you don't know.
Right.
So if I would have known about, if I knew anything about restaurants and how little money that is, a walk-in cooler, we just had an ice machine repair for $3,000. It's like that money, you could dust through that money quick. So
fast.
I'm just lucky I didn't know because I might not have done it.
Yeah. But the big takeaways there, limit your personal liabilities. The less you can draw on your business, the less your business you need from your business, the more you can put back into the business. So like, are you willing to move in with mom and dad for a while? Like if you can, if that's an option, swallow your pride and do it. Like, are you willing to like get like, you know, sell like your new car for an old beater that will get the job done? Do it. Any liability you have, eliminate your debt before you open a restaurant so it can go all back into the restaurant.
100%. We were lucky that when in our personal lives, we moved down here. I don't think we had a lot of debt. So we were able to just live really below our means for years.
Yeah.
And it's not like, we had a great weekend. So now we can go on vacation. Like there was no buying expensive things. There were no lavish trips. There were, it was being 100% focused on trying to save a little bit of money for the restaurant.
Yeah.
So you can exist.
Right. The big lessons that Danny shared with me in our conversation just before I rolled into here, when you get to that point when you're living with only $100 in your checking account, it's so hard for you to do the right thing because you're so stressed out. And it's not the best. It's so bad for your mental health. And you make bad business decisions when you're that vulnerable. So it's so...
Totally true. And our staff, I hear staff members talking about, I'll hear them. They'll be like, they'll be talking about their money issues and, I got to pick up a shift. I got this bill due. And, they think like, I can't relate to that. It doesn't feel like that long ago I was overdrafting my checking account, just like everyone else. Like, I mean, that wasn't that long ago. Right. So like, I'm no stranger to being able to live frugally and just trying to skate by. But in the restaurant industry, if you run out of money, you just close. You stop paying sales tax. You know, also, you know, one thing that my brother, my little brother did have in place, which really helped a lot, was a good accountant. So we were able to know sort of our numbers. Things were being tracked. We never were behind on sales tax or had any tax issues. So that was huge, was having an accountant. Because I think that's what happens to a lot of people. They get in a race. You know, you run out of money or you're stressed out about money. You know, you want to take a vacation because you're working 100 hours a week. And so you skim on your sales tax or you don't, you know. So we're lucky that we never were in that game.
I'm just going to mention it. We won't go deep into it because my listeners, they've heard it from me a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Profit first. I don't know if you've heard of Profit First. Mm-hmm. Mike Michalowicz, this idea of just cash flow allocation. Every dollar that you make, allocating cash to tax, profit, owner's pay, operational expense, it is a game changer. And it just takes all the guessing out of it. Just like what you have in the bank is what you – that determines your growth.
Yeah.
And you just allocate that cash. And as more money starts, if you start getting busier, you know, and you take, you put the profit aside for investing in assets so you can make more money. And like, it just takes care of itself. But
yeah, I mean, we've been reinvesting nonstop. And since I got into this in 2012, like even my mentality now is not to pay myself. I mean, now that I have kids, I want to be able to provide for my kids, but like,
profit isn't necessarily like a bad word, right? Like, yeah, it's something that you need to provide security for yourself, your family, and the people that you're responsible for. And to, you know, it's but you have to make sure it happens so you can grow and so you do have that fiscal security.
Yeah. And one point where you know, I was proud when you know, my wife and I sort of lived well below our means for years, because leading up to COVID, when the restaurant industry was shut down and nobody had any money saved, we did. And I remember we shut down for 3 weeks and we laid off zero people. We kept every single employee at both locations paid. All the servers, I took the average of the previous 6 months' tips and I paid all the servers. I took the average of every cook and manager and paid them in full. While we were closed during COVID, nobody missed a paycheck. I laid off zero people, and I was proud of that. And I remember talking to my older brother, who it's a family-run business, and he provides some business advice and guidance. I remember I'm like, how long are we going to – I mean, keep in mind the world's melting down, and I didn't know how long – are we going to be closed for a week, a month, 5 years? Who knows? So now I was talking to him. I'm like, look, we got to keep people paid just so I could sleep at night. And – you know, we sort of just made the decision that we're going to keep paying people and just go down with the ship until we just couldn't take it any longer. And, you know, we paid out over $110,000. And that's outside of PPP and all. That's before the government announced any
support.
Yeah. Any support. Yeah. We spent $110,000 keeping staff paid, because our cleaning guy, our cleaning guy in Chapel Hill, who does dishes for us until 4 in the morning and then cleans the restaurant from 4 to 6 a.m. He's got 3 kids. How am I not going to keep him paid and me sleep at night? I couldn't do it. So I'm like, I'm going to keep paying everyone until we just run out.
Right.
That was the mentality. And we were able to do that because we'd saved money for years. And my wife and I didn't go to the Bahamas. And I was driving a 2012 Nissan Pathfinder. Like, so I, you know, I'm thankful that we were able – that we put those processes in place to save money, because when shit really hit the fan, I was able to be there for our employees who work so hard for us.
And they're there for you today.
Yeah, 100%.
It comes back around. So I really want to start focusing on, you know, we got to this point, the initial, like how hard it was, the challenges. You said a year in is where the tipping point started to happen.
Yeah.
Like, what were the key things, if you're like looking back, like what was it that you started doing differently that it got easier?
You know, I think... you know, just sort of doing the math on food and beverage. I mean, there's a lot of restaurants to this day that don't have their menu costed out. They don't know how much it takes to make a burger. What's the burger cost and what are you charging? I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, I love this dish, so this is going to be on the menu and I'm going to make up a number to charge for it because that's what I think I should charge. But meanwhile, it's losing money. So really costing out the menu. Raising prices. My wife will, she still goofs on me because she, we had like our sodas were like 99 cents or $1.49 or whatever they were back in the day. And so she went around to every restaurant in Greenville and was writing down all their drink prices. It's like, see, our drink prices are too low. So we raised them to $1.99. So really just making sure our pricing, our menu pricing was where it should be. And then obviously, you know, switching French fries or buns or, you know, sort of what I did for years and years and years, I'm still doing to this day. It's like, how can we improve but keep costs the same or cut costs? And if you really dive into it and grind it, you can find ways to do that. So that was kind of the way we were able to save money.
Success by 1,000 cuts, right?
Exactly.
And just like little cuts here, little cuts there, not at the expense of quality too, which is what I'm hearing from you. So like,
oh, 100% no.
But also just knowing your value. And I think that's where most people get wrong in this industry. And I think it's becoming less of an issue as more information flows. But just menu engineering. Like, what does it literally cost us to make this to the penny? And then what profit do we want to make? And then tack that onto it. Like, you need to charge, at least cover your cost of goods.
And just like really knowing what is important to the customer and not being romantic about your food. There's so many people that in restaurants and bars stop being romantic about a certain brand of liquor or a certain piece of food. Like, you need to make money. Like,
right.
That's the only thing that matters is making money. So know what the customer wants. Know what is going to taste good in a drink, cocktail, or a burger or a dish. And then just make sure you're making money. Stop being so romantic about, spending 10 hours prepping some goofy labor. Dish that right. nobody cares about.
Right. I think ego comes in there a lot.
100%.
So,
totally.
Like, yeah. Put your ego aside. It's not about you. It's not about your recognition. And there are people who just have values. And I understand sustainability and the cost of sustainability. I get that part of it. You know, and it's not... We have to make money, right? And there's more to this than the money. But at the end of the day, if you're not making the money, then you won't be able to do what it is you love.
The biggest disaster would be to be extremely busy and make no money.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what was happening when I first got down here. And I thought I was extremely busy back then, but looking back on it, it really wasn't. But in the time, it was. But so having business practices in place, and that's where I sort of got lucky, was people were coming through the door. So what my little brother was good at was making the place cool, making the place fun, making the place attractive. So my job was a little easier, just putting business practices in place. It's always easier when people are coming through the doors.
Right.
I feel for anybody who is having a hard time getting people to walk through the door, because it's much easier to sort of fix things and put business processes in place when people are, you know, coming in to enjoy the product.
Right. So after a year, the business is already established. It had the loyalty. It had the people coming. After a year, you started diving into more of the numbers. After like understanding the basics, you started looking at more of the details and menu engineering. And what was the new beginning, though?
And by the way, you make it sound fancy. It was literally just making stuff up. And I still do that. I'm like, ask my wife, okay, what should we try? Like, literally just... Like, menu engineering is like just guessing and, I don't know. There was no fancy process. It was literally just guessing. It's like, oh, well, you know, let's, I don't know, just let's raise this price or let's take this thing off the menu. And
well, I mean, even that alone of just giving yourself permission to charge what you're worth, you know, I think people are so afraid of charging because they want to offer value. But at the same time, you can't really deliver value in experience unless you have the resources to do it.
And there will get to a point where that kind of goes out the window because you're so busy. You're like, you know what? Who cares? Like, if someone doesn't want our product because you raise the price a dollar, go somewhere else. Like,
right. You don't want those customers.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just busy. You don't want to deal with it.
2012, you take over. 2011, 2013. Oh, sorry, I had a date here. What happened in 2000? That was 1 year in. But I mean, I'm trying to figure out like specific dates.
Yeah,
like, important points.
Look, and at the same time as we're starting to save a little bit of money, we start to ramp up social media. Now, it's pretty early on with Twitter and Instagram and, you know, doing, you know, we were doing the Wendy's thing before, you know, Wendy's is, you know, razzing people on social media. We were doing that 5 years before they were doing it. So really being ahead of the social media game, building a brand, you know, my wife always thought the Redskins cheerleaders were cool. You know, the professional football team. Now they're the Commanders.
Yeah.
So she was like, you know what? Our staff, we need to treat our staff like, because all of my brother's concept, like all the servers are girls. She's like, these girls need to be the Redskins cheerleaders, like the coolest girls in town, the hardest working, the best paid. You know, this is a prestigious job. So that's kind of where, you know, staffing evolved for us. So just being ahead of the game and promotions and doing a lot of things that other restaurants don't do. I mean, even to this day, my wife, there's a couple cheesy burger places near our Chapel Hill location. And she's like, we are not that burger place. Let's be edgy. Let's be cool. Let's try new things. Let's be goofy. Let's be out there. Let's, you know, so that to this day, we're still trying to do things that other people aren't doing.
I mean, I'm curious to get into like the psychographics of that, right?
Yeah.
So like this is like the marketing coming in and realizing that people go places because of what people think of me when they see me there, right?
True.
And I think that your wife and maybe you too kind of saw the value of really being selective with who you hired and establishing like this higher tier, higher quality worker and people who want to be associated with hardworking and, you know, like the Redskin, like the Redskin cheerleaders. Like, how do you create that culture? How do you say, like, this is who we want to be then? But then how do you actually get cool, hardworking, attractive people to come work for you?
Yeah, I mean, anyone can serve a drink with fresh squeezed juice or a beer or hot dog. So what it comes down to is the people. And that's kind of something that I sort of had an instinct for. And just if you finding good employees and paying them. I mean, we pay our back of house more than any restaurant in this whole city. Our servers, luckily, due to generous customers and the volume of customers that are coming through the door, are making more money than any server or bartender in the whole city. So it's about finding good employees and treating them better and paying them more.
Yeah.
So that's it. And then, you know, little things like our staff Christmas party is nicer than any staff Christmas party, any corporate Christmas party. You know, I worked at CBS. Like, it was way nice. Our staff Christmas party now is way nicer than our Christmas parties at CBS. It's like, you know, everyone's getting dressed up, full open bar for people over 21, awesome food spread. Like, so just, you know, doing things the right way, working incredibly hard, treating people as good as you can possibly treat them, and being overly generous. And if that's not good enough, take a hike. It's kind of my mentality.
So as your operational costs increase, right, because you're offering more money, you're spending money on these parties, are you offering benefits?
We do now. So it took a while, but, you know, health insurance reimbursement, you know, we reimburse 75% for our full-time employees. We reimburse 75% of their premiums. We've an awesome 401k.
So if your bottom line is increasing, right, how are you driving more? Like, I guess where I'm going with this, if your costs are increasing, are you increasing what you're charging, or are you just doing more volume?
We've raised our prices, but, you know, that's way slower than, you know, we've sort of solved all our problems with volume. So through marketing and promotions and getting people through the doors, that's where we've been able, saving money, cutting costs while improving quality, mainly cutting costs while through improving quality, is where we're able to offer benefits. You know, I remember in my old job, one thing that would annoy me is when I would get calls and texts on my cell phone, but like the radio station didn't pay for my cell phone. I'm like, you're blowing up my phone 24 hours a day, but like the station won't pay for my cell phone. So now I make sure all of our managers have paid cell phones. So really just cutting costs while improving quality making sure your marketing and promotions are through the roof. And that, you know, if your quality is going up and your marketing promotions are through the roof, people should be coming through the doors.
Yeah.
And if they are, then that's how you can offer these things.
So in terms of cutting costs and improving quality, reflecting back over the past 10 years after you start really getting a grasp on your business and things start getting easier, reflecting back, what were the key things you did that improved quality and cut costs?
Something stupid that sounds really small that every restaurant does, but we weren't doing it. Portioning out green bean fries. Portioning out. When I first got there, we were doing no portioning. It's like there were no cost controls in place. There was no inventory process. I mean, even now our inventory process could get better. But like, so basically, you know, upgrading your French fry. Like we upgraded our French fry to a fry that's, you know, and I didn't know if there's one French fry that looks like McDonald's, it doesn't taste like McDonald's. So like, I didn't know there were different types of quality of potatoes. I had no idea. I thought a French fry was a French fry. So offering a better French fry that tastes awesome, holds heat longer, but at the same time, you are making sure the right portion is going on each plate. So you're cutting costs, improving your quality.
So cutting costs by portion control and then offering a better product to bring people back.
Correct. And then knowing what people are going to care about. So like, sort of everything we do is marketed. Everything we do, and this dates back to my brother, and he had the same thought as well. Everything needs to be geared towards girls. So there's a reason why we were doing the smash burger, Shake Shack type burger before anyone else was, because we knew if there was a 20-year-old girl that was going to go out for a hamburger, she's not going to eat a big giant piece of thick cow.
Right.
She wants to put on a dress and have an awesome, great tasting smash burger that's, you know, 5 ounces, 6 ounces, and not 9 ounces that a lot of other restaurants are serving. We knew we wanted a hot dog that fills the bun, but it's not this big giant hot dog you get at the ballpark where you want something that a girl's going to be able to eat, and enjoy.
So why did he, what was his rationality to make sure that the focus on the women?
Yeah, I mean, that's just how this world works. I mean, that's kind of what we've stuck to. I mean,
I didn't want to
in the restaurant and bar business. I mean,
well, that's true. I mean,
if girls come in, then anything I do when it relates to bars and restaurants is 100% of my thought is how is this going to affect women?
Right.
0% on guys. I still to this day, I've never thought about guys, and I still don't to this day.
Well, if you make the women feel comfortable, if they want to be there and they're enjoyed there and they like it, if they go there, the guys are going to follow.
Yeah, that's just human nature, right?
I mean, right. So what are the less obvious things? You pointed out the making the food approachable to women.
You know, another thing we do is, as far as staffing, there's too many people inside these restaurants working. So it's like, let's pay everyone a ton of money, but work them extremely hard. So, you know, I'm thinking of one cook in our staff. Guy's probably making $22, $23 an hour, but he's worth four people. So it's instead of having four people in there, paying him $12 an hour, let's have one guy in there, pay him a ton, make him feel valued, and work him extremely hard. You know, and another thing is, we run our staff, even front of house, extremely thin. So I want our servers that are going to be in there, I want them to make a ton of money because they're going to enjoy working there. They're going to make more money than any other restaurant, but they're also going to work twice as hard.
So a couple things. I want to unpackage working extremely hard. I think today it's weird. We live in this time where there's like a shift happening in the culture of the industry where we're being more conscious about not working people so hard.
Yeah.
Right. But at the same time, if you have a culture where that has pride in working hard and you take care of them and you're offering them benefits and like, how do you find like these lines? So like, and I think also in the world we're living in too, we have to be careful with the narrative around women. Right. And walking that line between respecting women, but also recognizing that there's a draw to having women around,
which by the way, I never worked in a restaurant before I jumped into this business, and my wife talks about you know, something good that's come over social media is, you know, restaurant owners and people in the restaurant business are being held accountable for their actions. So, I mean, I think if you talk to any of our staff members, I mean, you know, we do everything above board, try to do everything the right way. You know, I tried to run this goofy little hot dog restaurant like I'm running, you know, any big company. And so I do think all the crazy, you know, sexual harassment stuff and, you know, you just can't get away with that stuff. Where well, yeah. back in the day you could, and it was hidden and it was an acceptable part of the restaurant industry. Now there's none of that.
Right.
At least there's less of that than there was back in the day.
Right. It's always going to exist, but we can do better to get those numbers as small as possible. And I mean, at the end of the day,
but let me back to what you were saying before I lose that my thought. As far as employees, you kind of have to take more of their shit, pay them more. But taking more of their shit is just being less like a drill sergeant. You know, being a little more lenient if they're a few minutes late. Being a little more lenient if, you know, they. I mean, there's a lot of these chain restaurants that have all these goofy rules. If you don't show up with 10 pens and, you know, a notepad and, you know, your shoes aren't clean, you're going home, you're fired. Like, you can't do any of that stuff. Right. But so, working hard is non-negotiable.
Right. So what I'm hearing from you is that you expect a lot. More from most other restaurants would expect from their employees in terms of their work ethic and showing up and, you know, just showing up to do work. But you're also giving more.
Correct.
And you're giving more, you're paying them more, you're seeing them and recognizing them and valuing them more and appreciating them more. So if you're going to expect more, it can't be a one-way street.
Correct.
If you want to attract onto yourself the hardest working people that are loyal to you, like, you got to give before you get, and that's come out of your story. And you are. And I was hoping, like, this is like what I was hoping, I was expecting the conversation would go here.
Yeah.
Because I could see it happening.
Yeah.
But what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, is that if you want to attract onto yourself the hardest working people, you can't expect that hard work to come before you've given.
Totally true. And yeah, exactly. And what it comes down to, here's what I demand is people who work hard, try hard, and are nice, are good for culture. If you don't work hard, I mean, there's basically two things you can get fired for at Sup Dogs. Being an asshole and stealing. Anything else, I can find a job for you. If you're nice, I'll find a job for you. I think the work hard thing sort of stems from the top down. I mean, I was plunging the toilet. I was cleaning up throw up a week ago.
I bet that never happens
here. Yeah. here at this bar, it doesn't, thank goodness. But
it's a little elevated.
So, you know, setting the example from the top down, I think there's a lot of restaurants where the managers are doing nothing, the owner's doing nothing. The owner, you'll never in a million years see me sitting at the bar drinking while the staff's in the weeds, or
right.
I'm in the trenches with them as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, I'm happy you're saying this because you know, we're about to launch. Like, I'm finally, after 10 years of learning, I'm taking the leap to start teaching some of the biggest takeaways and lessons I've learned. And I think one of the things, and I love culture, and I think when people make their core values and they make their vision and they make their mission statements, they're thinking like, I'm making this for my people, right? But I think the reality is you're making it for you.
Yeah.
You're writing down the things to keep you honest. And once those core values, once your vision, your mission gets written down, it's so you stay, like, you start doing those things every day. You have to do those things before anybody else. Culture isn't what you write on paper. It's what's happening every day. And it's a code of rules for you. What's going through your mind as I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, you can't... I think, you know, you have to lead by example. I mean, and I try to do that every single day, whether it's, you know, never will you hear me tell someone, you know, go clean up the throw up or go mop the floor, or go do these dishes. You know, it's like, hey, help me with this. So I'm there right along with them. You know, anything that I've asked them, anything I've ever asked an employee to do, they've seen me do first. And nothing is more important than the culture of the restaurant, because ultimately that affects the customer experience. I mean, I tell any staff member we hire, like, most restaurants, you know, are pretty small. And if people are in a bad mood, if there's one person in a bad mood, instantly that affects the customer experience. It just does. So, you know, we're at a weird point where we're pretty big, but we're not too big where I can't know each employee on a personal level. Back in the day, before we had two locations in this business, three locations, I used to really know everything about every single employee 24 hours a day. Now that's a little tougher, but, you know, just caring about people, leading by example, and then trying to provide value. I mean, anything we do in our business, my thought is, first off, for our staff, in a very distant second, is our customer. It's just how it goes. And I care about our customer, but I care more about our staff.
So I kind of want to go back to this idea. And you mentioned earlier just the importance of making women feel comfortable, right?
Yeah.
Things you can do in your business that are maybe less obvious, on like things you do to go out of your way to make the people who you're responsible for feel comfortable and safe. And they're attracted to you. Like, what are those like less things that we can all do to appeal towards?
Are you talking about staff members?
Yeah, staff members and customers, just generally speaking. And this is kind of a weird conversation, but at the same time, I think there's something here that is good advice on just how to make people feel like safe and comfortable and want to come be with you.
You know, what I take pride in is, you know, I think anyone that's any server, I think any female that's worked for us, and guys too, but any female that's ever worked for us has left, after working for us for an extended period of time, has left with more confidence in themselves than they came with. Meaning, you know, I take pride in making sure our staff feels comfortable, making sure our staff is confident, making sure our staff feels supported, making sure they're coming to work in a culture that everyone wants. And over time, you know, the first thing I tell a new employee, and I say, look, you know, I want you to know that I don't ever get mad if you make a mistake. So if you fuck up, just think to yourself, I said, as long as you don't punch a customer in the face, I can fix everything else. So if you fuck up, just think to yourself, hey, did I just punch that guy in the face? And if the answer is no, who cares? It's all good.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully that immediately disarms them, because everyone's worried about messing up. They're worried about looking dumb in front of other employees. So I just try to boost people's confidence. When they do a great job, recognize them. Even when they do a job that's not that great, still tell them it's a great job. Because over time, you know, you tell somebody they're pretty good enough times, they're going to feel that, and they're going to and that's going to reflect in their confidence and their behavior. And so I take pride in someone who comes to the door that, you know, doesn't have a ton of self-esteem. After they're done working for us for a couple of years, they're going to feel pretty good about themselves.
Yeah, it's
male or female.
It's reinforcing the good things that are happening and not only speaking to them when something bad has happened.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And look, and if they do something, there's a way to address that. There's a way to talk to people. There's a way to not make them feel dumb. And I think the restaurant business still has a long way to go in boosting self-esteem and caring about people and wanting to pay them as much money as you possibly can pay them, but at the same time expecting them to work hard. So I think we are ahead of the game when it comes to all of that stuff, and it's given us a competitive advantage.
Yeah. Now's a good time to take another break to thank our sponsors. And when we come back, I kind of want to talk about where you guys are today, and the things you're doing that you know are like really contributing to your success, and how we can emulate that in our own business.
This podcast is made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. Everyone who attends this live event will get a recording of the Restaurant Systems Pro 4-day How to Run a Profitable Restaurant from Soup to Nuts recording. This event costs $2,500 to attend live, and you'll get it for free. Head to go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. That's go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. This episode is brought to you by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, used cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to those messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. RTI's services are not limited to oil. They also provide insurance premiums and automated hood cleaning solutions plus hood filtration systems, making your hood cleaning process easy, automatic, and worry-free. In addition to all this, Restaurant Technologies, Inc. can help you reduce your carbon footprint, which we all know is becoming increasingly more important to the consumer. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way.
We're back, and help me really fully understand. We talked about the two locations. You have your cocktail bar across. It's called Orange Crush.
It's called Crush. So Crush. Our signature drink, how this sort of, people are like, why are you making vodka? So our signature drink over at Sup Dogs is called a Sup Crush. Okay. So it's basically, we crush a fresh orange or a fresh piece of grapefruit. Then we add vodka and a splash of Starry or Sprite. And that's our signature drink. We have become like the number one flavored vodka account in the entire state. So we've sold more Smirnoff and Absolut at one point more than anybody in the state.
Yeah.
So it's like, how can we, so we should just be making vodka for ourselves. So the drink is called the Sup Crush. So the vodka is called Crush Vodka that we've started, and this business is called Crush, a Sup Dogs distillery and cocktail bar.
Got it. I love vertical integration, by the way. I'm a geek for it. I think it's so smart. And
thanks.
I want to get more into like what we should know if we like how to think like that. And
yeah.
So in terms of profitability, like what do you think a restaurant, what's a good number for a bar to aim for in terms of like percent profit?
You know what? When it comes to percent profit, I really don't even think about that. What I think about is driving revenue. I can talk more about revenue than I can talk about profit margins.
Let's talk about that then.
So when I got into this business, it was like, look, let's drive revenue because that solves any and all problems, and then let's hope the bank account goes up.
So what are you doing that most restaurants or bars don't do that is driving revenue?
The secret sauce to the restaurant business is, and this sounds cheesy, is interacting with customers and doing everything with social media. Having a great Instagram presence, having a great presence on Twitter, anytime someone tags you, anytime someone posts about you, interacting with them.
So when you say
being in the restaurant, talking to each and every person that walks to the door, interacting with every single person that tags you in a post.
Do you train your people how to interact with guests?
I mean, not really. I just kind of let people be themselves. I mean, you try to hire a certain type of person who's pretty outgoing and knows how to talk to people, but no, I just don't time it.
So in terms of like the great interaction online and social media, like what you said, you have to have a great Instagram presence, but what does that look like? Like, what is your process?
Just being unique. So posting, here's what I would tell people to do. You know, nobody cares about, $3 Miller Lights, or no one cares about specials or even pictures of your food. Show behind the scenes stuff. I try to show behind the scenes stuff. I try to sort of give people a glimpse into what it's like to bottle vodka, what it's like to make hot dogs, what it's like to host or serve at our restaurant or make drinks. So give people a behind the scenes look at your business. And I think emotionally they're going to connect to that. And then if they have a connection with, if you've interacted with somebody or you have a connection with them, whether it's on Instagram or in person at the restaurant, when they're deciding where they're going to eat, they're more likely going to choose you if they've made a connection with you. So, so the secret sauce to bringing through the people through the door is having a great online presence through social media. It just is, not through how good your food is or how good your drinks are, because it's good everywhere. It's really building connections with people through social media, through events, through making a personal connection with them when they come to the door, making them want to return.
How do you build a connection with somebody? It's one thing to have behind the scenes content that is more appealing, is more humanizing. But once somebody interacts with you, like how far do you take that connection, that interaction digitally?
Yeah. I mean, I think just being authentic and being real, you know, when someone posts a picture of their bacon cheese fry burger that they bought, or they buy a bottle of vodka at the ABC store, like, you know, I just sincerely thank them and send them a couple hearts. And because I'm extremely appreciative of that. You know, I still think it's a miracle that families like this family's walking at us up dogs right now. The fact that they chose our restaurant, came in, ate food, enjoyed it, and then walked away, and we provided that experience, that still blows my mind that we're doing that every single day.
Yeah.
So making sure they know that we're appreciative of the fact that they came in our restaurant, making sure they see me in the restaurants, making sure they know they're supporting a independent local family restaurant. And then whether it's interacting with someone online or in the store, you know, that's something I've been pretty good at. And that's the secret sauce. Social media is the secret sauce to the entire business. It just is. And, you know, we've been doing it. And people are like, oh, well, you know, it's easy for you to say. You have 50,000 followers on Instagram and 25 on Twitter and 40,000 or 30-some thousand on TikTok. It's like, I've been doing this 24 hours a day since 2012. Like, if you do it for 10 years, you could have a following too. So it takes time.
What is your mindset when you wake up and you pick up your phone and you start doing social media?
A lot of it I just enjoy. So like, let me give you, you know, Christmas morning, I do this thing where I've been doing it for years. Like, you know, okay, who got the world's worst Christmas present? And then we're going to make up for it and text you a SupDogs gift card. So people are like, ah, thanks, Grandma. Grandma got him a stick of deodorant, or, you know, people just have a lot of wacky family members who give horrible gifts, and we make up for it and we send them a SupDogs gift card for $25. And how many people are they going to tell? You know, we sent them a gift card that, you know, cost us one third of that $25. So what does it cost us? $8. Meanwhile, they tell 10 people, oh my gosh, Grandma gave me a stick of deodorant, so SupDogs sent me a gift card. And they tell 15 different people. I mean, what's the value in that? I mean, the value, another thing is, I mean, this girl who's drinking espresso martini, when she takes out her phone and posts a picture of it on social media, like, there's so much value in that that most restaurant owners don't realize. I mean, I think some are starting to realize it, but like, still not enough. Like, these people are doing the advertising for us. So by taking pride in,
what can we do to create a path of least resistance to get people to do social media for us?
Yeah, I mean, everything's got to be Instagram worthy. All of our cooks know every hot dog you make, every plate. You know, it's a another thing that we've been better at than most people throughout the years is like picture perfect food every single time. Even if it's a hot dog and fries, there's a way to do that picture perfect. So when you come and get a Hawaiian dog, the drizzle, the sup dog sauce and honey mustard drizzle on the pineapple is going to look awesome here, and it's also going to look the exact same in Chapel Hill.
You know I want to get into that kitchen with my camera, right?
Yeah, yeah, it should. As long as it doesn't look dirty back there, I'm
all for it. Yeah, we'll give
them a heads up. But yeah, it's like picture-perfect food, Instagram-worthy drinks, Instagram-worthy food, you know, providing a good energy inside the restaurant, then a lot of times the customers are going to do the advertising for you, so...
Is there a campaign? You kind of shared like what I would call a campaign where every Christmas you have a campaign where you do your Christmas gift, bad Christmas gift thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for the sake of calling it something, let's call it a campaign, right?
Sure.
It's a process. It's something that you do.
Yeah.
It's a ritual. What are some other campaigns that you've seen traction with that we can emulate?
You know, I would say everything comes down to just posting behind the scenes stuff. People want to see, people want to. You can build an emotional connection with people if they can get a behind-the-scenes look into the work you're doing, how you treat your staff. I mean, I think people enjoy seeing, you know, if they like coming into Sup Dogs and they like our food, I think they'll enjoy seeing what it's like working at our restaurant or seeing what it's like, you know, if you're an ECU grad or UNC grad, seeing what it's like on game day, see what it's like in the kitchen, behind the bar, sort of behind-the-scenes stuff.
You're inspiring me for content right now.
Dude, I mean...
I want to. I know, the camper, right?
Yeah, you need to be doing behind-the-scenes everything. So people build an emotional connection with you.
Like, I could be way better about that. For me, like, what's going through my mind, I just installed, like, Starlink and an inverter. And it's all these things that I'm doing so I can better serve the community. Things that people don't realize that I do.
You posted a TikTok about Starlink. And, I mean, because... I only hear no Starlink from like stuff that's going on in Ukraine and all. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know anything about. So if you started documenting your use of Starlink, I mean, that TikTok would get tons of views.
But yeah, I think to your point, I think people just like to know what you're doing to make the experience. Like, what are you doing to go above and beyond? Like, how much do you give a fuck about us? And what are you willing to do to deliver on that give a fuck? You know,
exactly. And then I also think, in addition to that, sure, the social media stuff's great. But look, also your staff is going to be your best PR agents. So if you're an asshole and you treat your staff like shit and you don't care about them and you're greedy and you only care about money, I think if you ask any one of our staff members, there's nobody that could say Brett only cares about money because they know that's just not true.
Right.
So if you treat your staff well, I mean... That goes a long way in a local community.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of restaurant owners that don't treat their staff well. And guess what your staff's saying about you to everybody in the community?
Right.
So
people talk.
Yeah, exactly.
For
so
sure.
So you know, you got to be able to mix like the real life stuff, you know, treating people the right way for real, not being an asshole, being a good person. At the same time, having a great social media presence, or as best as you could. I mean, ours is pretty good, but I think it could be way better. There's just like you said.
Is it all in-house?
Yeah, it's me, my wife, our staff will text me photos. But like...
You were saying something. You think that your social media could be way better. And then you were saying, I mean, just saying, what was your train of thought?
Like, yeah, it was like, you know, you were saying, oh, I could be so much better. I mean, I feel that same way with us.
Right.
We do a lot, and people are like, oh, your social media is so good. I mean, I think it could be way better.
Right. What would you do to make it better? What are your ideas?
We just need way more content. I mean, there's so many TikTok ideas I have, so many Instagram Reel ideas, so many things for Twitter we should be doing that I'm just dropping the ball on just because I'm out of time.
Are you worried about TikTok being banned?
No, I really don't care. Although we have a great TikTok presence.
Yeah.
So, I
what about...
I don't particularly want it to be banned, but if it does, then all the attention will go somewhere else, and I'm confident we can adapt.
Well, yeah, I was curious. What about the more traditional forms of marketing? Like, we already talked about four walls marketing, how important it is to make people feel safe, to attract on to a certain target market, and to create that great experience when they're there. But what about, SEO and direct mail marketing and things like this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a ton about SEO. Our website could always be better. I'm not that good at that stuff. You know, one thing I do that a lot of restaurants owners don't do, if you're a local restaurant, anytime there's a big news story in Greenville that relates to downtown Greenville or a business story, a lot of times the news comes to me. And I've told them, here's my number. Call me with anything related to business. Call me with anything related to restaurants. Call me anything with anything related to the community. So it's kind of old school to be on local news, but in a small-ish community, it can still go a long way.
Got it. Anything we haven't discovered in terms of like what you think SupDogs does really well? I mean, one thing I would like to talk a little bit more about is this idea of vertical integration. What is vertical integration?
You know, I think it's for us. I knew, you know, I it's not like I'm that smart to be able to like, you know, really think about that sort of stuff. But I knew that we sold a lot of vodka, and I was like, well, maybe there's a way to make it for ourselves. So worst case, if nobody buys the vodka and nobody's coming in here for cocktails, well, at least we're the number one flavored vodka buyer in the state, and we'll just buy vodka from ourselves. You know, that's got to be more profitable than buying it from Smirnoff or Absolut. So that's kind of what we did.
So did you know anything about making vodka?
No, zero.
So how did you do that?
Just hired people. You know, hired a consultant, a distillery consultant, who just sort of walked me through the process.
What do we need to know if we wanted to do something similar?
I mean, you could just Google anything. Same way I did a restaurant. Yeah. How to start a distillery.
Yeah.
And I just start Googling distillery consultants. I found one that called me back and started talking with him, and then...
So how long ago did you start the distillery?
It was going on 3 years.
3 years.
So this took, you know, this didn't pop up overnight. It's been 3 years.
So what are the less obvious things that you should consider before starting a distillery and creating your own brand of vodka that might deter other people? Would you still do it knowing what you know today?
And look, whether it's vodka, yeah, 100%. But if it's, whether it's vodka or something else, like, it goes back to, like, I always want to be improving. I always want to be doing more. I always want to be reinventing ourselves. I want to always like do new, fun, cool things. And I always want to generate buzz, because in the restaurant business, you just get forgotten about really quickly. You can't just have the same good food every single day. And, you know, how can we reinvent ourselves and improve and
juxtaposition?
Yeah. So, you know, I think this has created a lot of buzz for our brand. I think it's a great product. I think people are enjoying it. And I think that's only going to help improve SupDogs, which
it
has.
Did you get any pushback from the town trying to open a distillery on a college campus?
No. In fact, the town's been incredibly supportive. So, you know, the good news is, you know, I've been trying to do the right thing for our community for over a decade. So once you have a little bit of that leverage, they're going to do all they can for you.
Once you've given, it works for everything.
It really
once
works
you give,
for everything.
You know, people recognize that.
Exactly.
It opens up doors.
And by the way, back to, you know, I kind of ignored like the profit margin thing. I should be way better at that stuff than I am. You know, I weirdly know a ton about our numbers, but I don't have time to sit around and, you know, I'm not one of these people that sits around and says, okay, you know, how much do we make during every lunch shift Monday through Thursday? And then what are our lunch shifts, profitability of lunch and dinner shifts and this menu item versus that menu? For me, I'm always trying to like go. Do a shit ton of revenue between three locations. I mean, this weekend was insane. There's people spilling out of the doors at SupDogs. There's people spilling out of the doors at SupDogs in Chapel Hill. The cocktail bar is jam-packed, and I'm barely have enough energy to fill all the vodka bottles to distribute across the state. So I don't have time to tell you what our... Did we have one extra person working at lunch that we shouldn't have? Or, you know, did we... How many logs of meat did we drop on the floor and have to throw away? I just don't have time for that.
Right.
Because I'm on the offense. I'm trying to score 150 points. And We're going to let the chips fall where they lie, and hopefully the bank account goes up. Now, look, that's right now. It's our busy season. It's intense. I'm just trying to survive each day. Now, over the summer, things are going to slow down. Next winter, things are going to slow down, and then, you know, I'm slowly going to put the time and energy into tightening the purse strings and really honing in on profitability. How can we save money? You know, little things. Like, here's sort of my mentality. Our vodka bottle, I wanted something that looked amazing, felt amazing, the best label, the best piece of glass, a nice synthetic cork top, just the great feeling vodka bottle from the beginning. Now, the profit margin probably isn't what it should be on that bottle if you ask any other distiller in the country. But I'm confident once people love it, then I'm going to be able to tighten those purse strings, just like what I did at Supdogs.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my mentality. I know a ton about our numbers, but at the same time, I'm moving so fast. I'm trying to put points on the board that I could be better
at. I want to wrap up today's conversation talking about putting points on the board and playing the offense and what kind of getting into like your mindset of what that looks like. But before we move away from the vertical integration, I am curious, just from like a legal standpoint, how are you structuring your business? Does this company have its own LLC?
Yeah.
Are you using an LLC series? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So each company has a different LLC.
Okay.
And, you know, I sort of just ask our accountant about that stuff. And then, you know, we've hired a bunch of attorneys, which just says, hey, here's the best way to do it. So, you know, I think people spend way too much time, we need to hit 19% French fry food cost, and that stuff's important, especially when you're just starting out.
Right.
But when you're doing significant volume and you're starting to become a decent sized player, you know, your books better be in check. You better have good attorneys that have operating agreements buttoned up. That stuff is incredibly important. And, you know, that's the type of stuff I spend a lot of time and energy on, for sure.
Yeah. Are there partners in the business aside from your family?
Yeah. No partners. Just it's a family-run business.
Got it.
And luckily, you know, the family is just sort of cheerleaders for what we do. You know, we pour every cent back into the business. And, you know, I think that's been a strength for us. We're not making major distributions to anybody. We're reinvesting money in staffing. We're reinvesting money into our businesses and real estate. And, we're lucky we've been able to get into a little bit of that stuff. So
with the distillery, you have your bar right here. So you have you're in-house sales. You have wholesale because you're in ABC and all the liquor stores.
Correct.
And then you also have your accounts, like your own restaurants that you sell alcohol to. So I'm assuming Supdogs purchases alcohol from Crush. There's like a transaction.
I wish. But North Carolina is sort of behind the time. So we have to
sell it to the state first.
Sell it to the state, and then Supdogs has to. But here we're lucky, we're able to sell, like if you walked in and said, oh, I want 12 bottles of vodka, I could sell it to you.
But you're still profiting. It's just there's a middleman getting their cut.
Correct. They're getting 50%.
Oh, Jesus.
So, you know, our bottle cost, and if you want to talk a little bit of numbers, our bottle cost $22.95. Same price as Tito's. How I came up with that price, I just made it up. It was going to be $19.95 or $20.95, and someone said, there's not a liquor out there that's priced at $20.95. So I'm like, well, if nobody's pricing at $20.95, I shouldn't. So I was going to be like, okay, we're going to be a dollar less than Tito's, because maybe that felt right to me. And then my wife was like, no, raise it one more dollar. Let's be the same price. So we're the same price as Tito's. I kind of just made it. It's a better product, I think. Same price. The ABC store buys it from you at for half. So they buy it from you for $11, whatever it is, $12. And so you got to do a significant amount of volume to make any money. But look, the liquid, when it comes to vodka, the liquid costs next to nothing. It's like 50 cents.
Yeah.
The glass, our glass bottle's $2.50. The label's $1. The synthetic cork is 75 cents. The shrink wrap is 12 cents.
Shipping
is a ton. The truck you had to buy to get it to Raleigh is a ton. All the 10 staff members you need to bottle it, $15 to $20 an hour, a ton. So,
got it. So, okay, before we start to officially wrap up, this idea of the offensive, going into the future, right? Like, what is your mindset? What's your strategy to continue to scale? Do you have what is your vision for the future of something?
Yeah, I don't know. Before we had kids, my wife and I were like, okay, we could have, if it was just me and my wife, we could have 50 locations. When you have kids, you start to want to be home more. Do you have any kids, by the way?
No, you think I could live in a camper and drive across the country?
Good point.
Doing it while I can, man.
So once you have kids, it changes everything.
I bet.
I mean, my wife and I were going to have 50 locations, and we still could. I think our concept would work in every single college town and towns that aren't college.
Yeah.
But I want to be at home. I want to spend time with my kids. So, I want to spend time with my wife. Now, that being said, if you want to go to the neighborhood barbecue and you want to have friends over for a movie night and you want to play board games with the neighbors, then this is not the business.
Yeah.
I have zero hobbies. I really have no friends. Me and my wife, my two kids, I have my friends from high school and my family. There is no, let's have the neighbors over for a cookout. There's none of that.
Even just being here setting up, you have a great relationship and rapport with your staff. I can see that. I can pick up on it.
Yeah.
I think that there's the work-life balance argument. Then there's also the life's work argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where like you just,
I like that.
You're like, hey, like this is my life's work. Like,
yeah,
I love this.
Yeah.
And like, I enjoy it. And I get what I need from the people that I work with. And
I think that's true.
There's some truth to that. If you're doing the right work, like how many people are willing to drive and live in a camper and drive across the country?
Like, that's true.
But I love it, And when you love what you do and you find purpose in that, like what else do you need?
See, I love operating a small business and I love working for myself and my family. Do I love restaurants? I mean, I don't think so. I don't know. Do I love the restaurant business? I don't know. I can't really answer. I love operating a small business. I don't know if I love...
What do you love about operating a small business?
I love the challenges. I love the grind. I love positively affecting people's lives. Like, to me, I was at our general manager's home for an Easter egg hunt yesterday. She had a bunch of kids over for a little Easter egg hunt in her yard. She lives in an awesome big home. And a lot of that's thanks to us. And to me, that's so cool that she can afford this big giant home. I mean, mainly because of her hard work, not because of me, because she's earned every cent. And her husband works hard too. But
you provided the opportunity.
Right. And to me, that's incredibly cool. I mean, I've hired young people that are homeless who have now... I get a kid who came to me not too long ago. He said, and he always carried a backpack into work. And I'm always like, okay, what's he stealing? I didn't really say anything to him. He's a hardworking kid. I just figured he's trying to steal. Like, why is he carrying a backpack into work all the time? Like, I knew he wasn't in school. I'm like, something's up. And he came to me not too long ago and he said, Brett, I just want to really thank you for this opportunity you've given me. A year ago when I started this job, I was homeless. I didn't really tell anyone because I was embarrassed and there's all these girls around right near university. I didn't want anyone to know. He's like, but, thanks to you and this job, I now have my own apartment. I'm buying a car next week. I think he's got like four different girlfriends. and this kid was homeless before he started with us.
Wow.
He's, his confidence has been boosted. He's got a little bit of money in the bank. And to me, that's just so cool.
Yeah.
And all the credit goes to him because he earned every cent. I mean, he's worked incredibly hard. But the fact that we can positively affect people's lives, like, that's really, really cool.
That is really cool. So you talked about, like, the future. It's been said that to be a restaurant that survives into the future,
yeah,
we need to really kind of start focusing on how can we do more with less. how can we start leveraging technology? How can we start improving systems? How can we start, to your point, like hire fewer people and then just have them do a better job? And how do we give them the tools to do a better job and do more with less? So as we look to the future, as the world around us continues to evolve, if you're not improving, then the world is going to surpass you, right? What are you doing to be prepared for the future? Like, what does that look
like? You know, I just kind of live in fear of everything going away tomorrow. And that's really true. And it's kind of a, sometimes it kind of sucks, but I think a lot of times it motivates me to get up every single morning. So I just work as hard as I can humanly work, but at the same time, have a great relationship with my wife and kids.
Yeah.
So whatever balance that is, I'm all in on doing that. And I live in fear of it all going away tomorrow.
Are you leveraging technology?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've tried to automate as much as we can. I mean, to me, switching to Toast has been a game changer.
Why?
I mean, just got every, I mean, I could tell you every analytic on our restaurant.
So just the data that you're
yeah, running. I know all of our best sellers everywhere. I know what hours are our top selling hours. I know what menu items. I know who's discounting what and who's voiding what and what's not how.
What are some of the more or some of the less obvious pieces of technology you've invested in that are just really helping?
I mean, if you look at Schedulefly, which is an online scheduling program, that's the first thing that kind of, when we joined Schedulefly, it made me feel like, okay, I'm a real restaurant owner now.
Not, when did you guys join with them? It was at least 2017, because that's when he interviewed you.
Yeah, probably 2014, maybe. Okay. 2015. And we were, for years, we were just tacking Excel spreadsheets to the cork board. And there's, I still walk by restaurants now. I'd still do that. I'm like, that's insane.
Why is that insane?
I mean, you're just wasting time, not doing things efficiently.
How does Schedulefly save you time?
I mean, just it's the easiest way to schedule your staff. It's the easiest way to communicate between staff. It costs pennies. It costs $35 a month. I'd probably pay $135 a month. It's, you know, just scheduling is a total nightmare for restaurants and small businesses. And instantly, it solves all scheduling issues. It solves all communication issues of, oh, I thought I was supposed to work. No, you were supposed to work. You said you'd pick up my shift, like all that little stuff.
Yeah, you can post online. A shift. People can take a shift. I think a manager has to approve it. So, like, you can't have somebody who's totally, you know, experienced being replaced with a green person on staff. Like, you have to, like, but it's a path of least resistance for the communication.
And then Toast has been a total game changer. And look, we used a local point of sale company that gave us great customer service. If a printer broke, dude was in a car driving a printer to us and hooking it back up for us. The Toast has been a total game changer. Being able to get tables in and out quickly using handheld, giving us every analytic you can imagine, knowing your numbers. I know our numbers better now than I've ever known them due to Toast. Super accurate. You know, being able to turn DoorDash, Uber Eats, on and off whenever you want, based on how busy you are. Just, I mean, it just can do so much. So, anyone that's not using Toast is just dropping the ball.
Is there?
And in fact, they should, for this ad, they should probably sponsor your podcast.
Toast has been a great past sponsor, past affiliate during the pandemic.
By the way, if you have any other point of sale company sponsoring you, maybe you should delete this part.
No, man, and that's one thing that I refuse to do. My job is not to push the products and services that are sponsoring the show. I happen to be in a great relationship with Restaurant Systems Pro.
Cool.
And I'm so fortunate to believe in that product. And they're not the only option out there. And they know that, like, if you were to talk about Restaurant 365 right now, like, I wouldn't shush you. I wouldn't edit that out. It's not my job to control the narrative. It's to listen and learn. And Toast is one of those great products, too. And Restaurant Systems Pro integrates with Toast.
Oh,
so,
cool.
You know, yeah. Totally. But what about, like, are there any other technologies that maybe you're thinking about? Or, I mean, a lot of people know about Toast. A lot of people know about Schedulefly. Like, but what's something that's maybe less obvious?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I hate, like, I always have this thing where, like, you know, we shouldn't make it tough to take people's money in any business. Like, if I want to, like, I hate going into Best Buy and they never have anything in stock. It's just like, why are you making it so hard to take my money? And I kind of feel the same way for our customers. people are still calling and placing takeout orders. You know, we got to answer the phone, and then we got to, what can we get you? Well, how much is this? Or what did you say? No cheese, and you can't hear. So just the process of someone calling the restaurant and placing a takeout order, that needs to be solved. I hate answering the phone. I hate our staff answering the phone. It's a waste of time. But sometimes people still like calling restaurants and placing an order. So how can we get phone orders? How can we seamlessly take phone orders without the annoying communication issues? So that's something I've been looking into. There's a lot of AI.
Slang AI?
Yeah, but then it's still like, you know, can we text you a link so you can place an order? That's tough because, like, I don't know. You're still hanging up on somebody who wants to give you their money and telling them to order online. So I don't know. I'm trying to figure that one out.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect example of the things we can do to streamline process, to work smarter, not harder, and to lean on technology and automation to make it easier for the consumer, a path of least resistance to get to what they're trying to do, right? And Slang is one of those products for sure.
Cool.
That's out there.
I should probably know more about it. I just don't.
Man, I've had a really great time talking to you. Thank you for opening up, getting vulnerable, sharing the story, sharing your brother's legacy.
Thank you.
Before we say goodbye, I just want to wrap up with a few standard questions that I ask all my guests. The first one is, what is one thing about your business, a value, a process, a system that makes you truly unstoppable?
Repeat that question one more time.
So what is a thing about your business, a value, a process, a system that's uncommon that makes you truly unstoppable?
You know, I just think the relationships we've built with staff and how close our staff has become, not just right now, but, you know, sort of, you know, the culture of our restaurant is what's made us unstoppable. I mean, you talk to people that worked here 10 years ago. I think they'll say the same positive things that our staff now says. And just that hiring process, getting the right people in place is something I'm incredibly thankful for. And it's definitely the people are what have made SupDogs unstoppable.
The mission of Restaurant Unstoppable is to inspire, empower, and transform the industry. So the way we're going to do that is by helping one restaurant owner transform at a time, but by giving them examples of people like you to inspire them and to sharing your knowledge. So how have you personally transformed? Who are you today versus the man you were when you first got started in this industry?
I care. Kids have made me care way less about the little dumb shit that I used to really haunt me. Being married and having kids has helped me be a way better business owner because I can leave stuff at work and I go home and I'm with my kids. I don't care about the little shit that would just drive me insane. It's just made me a better restaurant owner. It's given me a something to look forward, something to really, you know, take my mind off the craziness day to day of owning restaurants and owning your own business. And because when you go home, you know, I only care about my kids and my wife, and that's made me a better restaurant owner.
So this is the last question. It's a big one, so get ready for it.
But let me say one more thing.
Yeah, please.
I'm not a restaurant guy. I know nothing about cooking. I don't know anything. I still don't know a lot about restaurants. I just don't. But I'm a testament to, if you work 24 hours a day and you're not a drug addict, you're not an alcoholic, you're not a womanizer, you treat people the right way, you work incredibly hard, and you put out a decent product, you can make money and probably make a lot of it.
Yeah. So. Awesome. So if you got the news, you'd be leaving this world tomorrow. All the memories of you, your work, and your restaurants would be lost with your departure. With the exception of three pieces of wisdom you could leave behind for the good of humanity and your legacy, what would those three pieces of wisdom be? I think you could kind of just echo what you just said.
Yeah, I think I just answered that. So, yeah.
Don't be a womanizer.
Yeah,
work 24 hours a day.
Here's a couple things. I had a conversation with someone the other day, and I told him, you should get into a, like the, the restaurant business is incredibly competitive. That's correct. But I do think, see, I'm not that smart, right? But I'm just not. But I think the really smart people do other things. They're doing investment banking. They're doing consulting jobs. They're doing other things. So if you're kind of smart and you work hard, you got a shot in the restaurant business. And you grind, you got a shot.
You're giving me hope.
Yeah, so... Yeah, like, for instance, I was talking to someone who wants to open a cocktail bar. I'm like, dude. He's like, yeah, my family really want me to do it in New York City. I'm like, why would you open a cocktail bar in New York City? You know how many sharks are in New York? You know how many great cocktail geniuses are in New York City?
Expensive the rent is.
You mean, yeah. Do it in a place like Greenville, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Where you can be a huge shark. I mean, don't. Go try to battle those sharks in New York City. Do it here.
Yeah. So I'm going to distill. So the three pieces of advice. The first one was basically you don't have to be the smartest, but surround yourself with the smartest people.
Correct.
Is what I'm paraphrasing. Go to a small city where it's easier to be number one than trying to go
100%. What's easier to develop relationships.
Yeah.
And then the only thing you can control is how hard you work.
Yeah.
And I think you either kind of have that or you don't. Like, my dad has the ability to work 24 hours a day. My uncle works 24 hours a day. I think that was sort of instilled in me and, all the kids in my family. So you can control how hard you work. And if you work a ton and you work your butt off, you have a shot to make money, just like I said. Yeah. So it sounds sort of cliche, but there's a lot of restaurant people that don't work hard.
Right. Yeah.
There just is.
Brett, thank you so much, man. This was a lot of fun. And I found you because Will Bradley called you out to be a future guest in the show. So, and I really want this next question to be the North Star of Restaurant Unstoppable. Who do you respect and admire? Somebody who's taking care of their people, who's making money, who's, challenging the status quo, really shaking the industry. If there were a guest on the show tomorrow, you'd absolutely be interested in hearing what they have to say. Who's that for you?
I would probably say my boy Jim, John at Jimmy's Seafood in Baltimore.
Okay.
Look them up on social media. The events they do are next level. Unbelievable events that they put on. They put on these things called the Tailgoat, which are like the world's most insane tailgates with celebrity DJs, and just what they're doing from a marketing standpoint, events, to the food, the product they're putting out. It's pretty mind blowing what they're doing. So I would love to listen to you chat with him. And it's a family. I think his dad started it, and it's all like sort of a tribute to his dad, I think. So I would love to listen to that.
John, look out. I'm coming after you. I'd love to get you on the show. I'm happy you mentioned a Baltimore restaurant, because I was driving past Baltimore on my way down here, and I was like, I've not gone to Baltimore yet. I haven't done any interviews in Baltimore. So this is my excuse to go check out Baltimore and what's going on there. And if we are inspired by today's conversation and we're interested to follow you and your social media, or maybe we want to come work for you, or maybe we want to connect some way, what's the best way to connect?
Yeah, just probably through Instagram at SupDogs on Instagram, at Crush Vodka on Instagram. Usually I'm on there, my wife's on there. That's the easiest way to reach out to. That's the easiest way to reach out to me.
And this is episode 1070. Head over to restaurantunstoppable.com/1070. We'll have a link of today's discussion and any tools or services that were recommended, books, if any. I don't think any books are recommended, and how to connect with Brett over there. And Brett, thank you so much, man. You make what I do possible. And this is where I say there is no questioning. You are unstoppable.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers. There's another episode wrapped up here at Restaurant Unstoppable. Special thanks to our guest today, Brett Oliverio, for coming on and being a shining example of just swallowing your pride. You don't need any experience to be successful in this restaurant industry, but you do have to be humble and you do have to be willing to learn and just constantly improving every
day, and Brett is a shining example of that. Also a shining example of just taking care of your people and doing right by others and really raising the bar on the quality of individual you hire. And like attracts like. If you have a team of amazing people are going to come into your restaurant. It's that simple and also that hard. It's really that hard. And it all starts with you. If you want to attract onto yourself amazing people, you have to be amazing yourself. And that's what we're here to do, is to give you the knowledge, the power, the inspiration to work on you so you can attract onto yourself the people you need to be unstoppable. Awesome stuff today. And if you want to support this podcast, this mission to change the world by changing the industry, if we lift the industry, we lift the world. And that's what I'm here to do. And the way I'm doing that is by connecting this generation's leaders with the next generation of leaders at Restaurant Unstoppable Network. So there's a ton of ways to support the podcast. You can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. You can share our content. You can, I don't know. There's a lot of things. But the most important thing you can do is to join Restaurant Unstoppable Network, where we're connecting you with these people and really going to town to serve you. And we're literally there to serve you. So what value do I bring to the world besides this podcast is the people that I've had on the show. I have over 1,000 amazing people in my network that I can pull on to serve you. So that's kind of the vision for myself, is like serving you through my network. Do you want to connect with somebody I had on the show? Do you want me to go after a product or service to get a demo? I'm here to serve you, and connecting you is the best way I can do it. And then also, we are doing some coaching. In 1,000 episodes, I am teaching the biggest lessons I've learned around culture, and I'm collaborating with Restaurant Systems Pro on the systems, and we're going to be doing a six-month teaching coaching program. Reach out to me, Eric, at restaurantunstoppable.com if you're interested in that. And I can't say goodbye without saying thank you to Jared Parisi for your copywriting and editing under the Sumadre brand, and Callan Miola, our community manager, crushing it over at Restaurant Unstoppable Network and Unstoppable Restaurant Owners and Operators Facebook group. That's it for today. Until next time, peace out.